Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, November 4, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined Election 2020 Nail Biter. Late Trump surge, uncounted ballots leave America in limbo from county offices to commander-in-chief. Waiting game continues. By Jeff D'Alessio. Election Tuesday came and went without the blue tidal wave that some pollsters predicted, the mile-long lines that voters were braced for, or the looting and civil unrest that law enforcement officials feared. It also ended without a victory or concession speech from President Donald Trump, former Vice President Joe Biden, or many of the local and state candidates who were part of an election that broke one turnout record after another, with more to come. What we know as Election Day transitions into Election Week, Illinois went for Biden, a call national media outlets made within seconds of the polls closing statewide, as had 11 other states as of midnight. 18 states, including Ohio and much of the Southeast, were called for Trump, hoping to avoid becoming the first one-term president since George H.W. Bush in 1992. In the night's only statewide race, Democrat Dick Durbin won a fifth term in the U.S. Senate, emerging from a field of five that included Mark Curran, the Republican former Lake County Sheriff. By the time all the votes were counted, and it could be another 2 weeks, County Clerk Aaron Ammons warned, Champaign County will have set a new record for voter turnout, surpassing the 92,842 total in 2016. More than 50,000 of them were cast before Tuesday even arrived. I don't know if we're going to come up with the 100,000 I predicted, but we'll be close, said Ammons, who noted that the 2016 election wasn't held in the midst of a global pandemic. What we didn't know as the clock struck midnight, much else. Among the unanswered questions, whether Republican U.S. Representative Rodney Davis beat Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan for the second time in 3 years in the 13th Congressional District race. With more than 200 precincts yet to report, the Associated Press surprised some by calling the race for Davis, but Londrigan said she wasn't conceding. How many of the 4,000 to 5,000 vote-by-mail ballots that were still outstanding in Champaign County Tuesday night would be returned in the next 2 weeks, and what impact they might have on a slew of races? As they trickle in, Ammons said, they could swing any close race. How many hours or days it will be before a winner is declared in several of the presidential swing states? Trump led in Florida, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. Biden in Arizona and Minnesota. But they were all too close to call. The wait for results, and not the officially certified ones that never come on the first Tuesday of November, could last several days, warned University of Illinois political science professor Brian Gaines, who has analyzed this unique presidential campaign for the News Gazette from the start. I'm hopeful that we've talked about this enough in advance that people will realize a delay in the official results and a relatively slow calling of a number of close races isn't really anything to get worked up about. It shouldn't be fodder for conspiracy theories or complaints that something untoward is happening or the results are being corrupted. It's just the consequence of a large number of mail-in ballots and the fact that a lot of states, and Illinois is one of them, have allowed ballots to turn up pretty late, as long as they're postmarked by Election Day, inside a 2-week window. It was a strange Tuesday for all involved, including those whose names were on the ballot. At 9:15 p.m., Piatt County Judge candidate Suzanne Wells was still waiting for any results at all in a county that was slow to report. In more ways than one, Wells said, this election had a different feel than any of the others in her 41 years of voting. The results of this election, people more than anything feel it will change their day-to-day lives, she said. I'm not sure people really felt that in any other election. It feels like this in this election, local and national, that people do have the impression that this is going to change their day-to-day life. In the end, Wells wound up losing to State's Attorney Dana Rhodes, 5,815 votes to 3,647. After a long day that included 5 hours on the U of I campus, incumbent Champaign County Circuit Clerk Katie Blakeman planned to stay up as long as it took to get a feel for how her race would turn out. Blakeman's time on campus Tuesday was the most fun she's had the whole campaign, in large part because she got to interact with voters, a challenge in the age of the coronavirus. The most challenging part of the campaign during a pandemic has been the lack of direct voter interaction, Blakeman said late Tuesday. In 2012, I knocked on 8,000 doors, held several town hall meetings, and I had a good sense of how voters were responding to me. This time has been much harder, but I have still enjoyed every chance I have had to talk to the people of Champaign County. Just before 11 p.m., Blakeman's Democrat opponent, Susan McGrath, said she planned to follow the results online until midnight, if I can stay awake that late. This experience is nerve-wracking, to put it mildly, incumbent Champaign County Coroner Dwayne Northrup said. I believe I am handling the delays better than wife Christine and the rest of my family and friends. Tuesday wasn't his first night but tracking results. Even with the new technology, there's always seems to be something that creates delays. But the prospect of having to wait 2 weeks after Election Day to know whether he'd kept his job would be a new one for Northrup. I hope that will not be the case this year, he said. Even tracking results as they came in on the county clerk's website wasn't as simple as past years, with votes being added in batches, in person first, followed by early votes. Just before 10 p.m., the clerk's website showed 100% of precincts reporting, but a total vote of just 10,613. After erroneous media reports, Ammons took to Twitter to note, media should refrain from calling races. Early vote and vote by mail have not been uploaded. Mark Sheldon, Champaign County's incumbent recorder of deeds, went to a 7 p.m. prayer service at St. Matthew's Church and came out an hour later hoping for results. A Republican who once had the job now held by Ammons, a Democrat, Sheldon was prepared to stay up as late as 2 a.m. if he had to. He was critical of Tuesday's showing, but added, as long as we get the right results out, it'll be okay. From the Our County section, Election 2020, Champaign County Races, Republicans Charge Fast Out of Gate, by Deborah Pressey, Urbana. Republicans on Tuesday were on their way to sweeping all 5 contested Champaign County offices for treasurer, coroner, recorder of deeds, circuit clerk, and auditor. But that's with only a sliver of the votes reported, 10,613, and without any early voting results available as of 11 p.m. Tuesday. As of the last available results, all 5 Republicans had healthy leads with their shares of the votes in the 60% range compared to their opponents in the 30% range. That included three Republican incumbents, Recorder of Deeds Mark Sheldon, Coroner Dwayne Northrup, and Circuit Clerk Katie Blakeman, plus two newcomers running for County Treasurer and County Auditor. Republican challenger Gary Maxwell was ahead of incumbent Democrat George Danis in the race for County Auditor, and Republican Ted Meyer was also ahead of Democrat Cassandra Johnson for County Treasurer. Both candidates for treasurer were running to fill the 2 years remaining in the four-year term of former treasurer Laurel Prussing. Current treasurer Marisol Hughes, who was Prussing's appointed interim replacement, wasn't running for election. Definitely returning for another term will be Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz, a Democrat who ran for re-election unopposed. Circuit Judgeships, Bohm's Strategy Pays Off, by Mary Schenck Urbana. It's a safe bet that Republican Judge Jason Bohm won't have to move from his office in the Champaign County Courthouse. Late Tuesday night, however, it wasn't as clear whether his new colleague would be Democrat Ramona Sullivan or Republican Sherry Kessler. Results from Douglas, DeWitt, Macon, Moultrie, and Piatt counties had Bohm winning over Democrat Scott Lerner, a Champaign attorney for 28 years, by an almost 3-to-1 margin in Champaign County at press time. Bohm was still ahead of Lerner, but several ballots had yet to be tabulated. Bohm has been a sitting judge since 2018, when he was appointed to fill the seat of Michael Jones, who retired. At the time, he said he would run for Jones' seat, a resident judgeship, which means running only in Champaign County. But after Democrats swept all the Champaign County offices in 2018, in an apparent anti-Donald Trump move, Bohm switched gears and decided to run for Tom DeFantis' seat, hoping the outlying five counties would carry him as a Republican. They did. Sullivan and Kessler are running for the seat that Bohm now holds. In 2018, when Sullivan ran for a circuit judgeship in all six counties, she won in Champaign County, but the other counties did not produce enough votes for her to take office. She was defeated by Roger Weber. Sullivan, 49, is currently an assistant public defender in Champaign County. Kessler, 43, is a Savoy attorney with a diverse general practice. She's been a lawyer since 2001. Whichever woman wins, she'll be the only elected female circuit judge in Champaign County, but joins two women who are already on the bench, appointed as associate judges. It's likely she will be assigned to family court. Bohm, 44, of rural Mahomet, will hang on to his current civil caseload, hearing jury law, chancery, mental, and miscellaneous remedy cases. He's married and has three children. Congressional races. Davis keeps his grip on 13th District. Miller wins. By Ben Zichterman, Champaign. Republican U.S. Representative Rodney Davis's bid for a fifth term representing Illinois' 13th District was successful, according to the Associated Press. But Democratic challenger Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan had yet to concede as of late Tuesday night. In the 15th District, Republican Mary Miller defeated Democrat Erica Weaver to fill the void left by John Chimkus. For the U.S. Senate, Democrat Dick Durbin defeated Republican challenger Mark Curran. The votes were still being counted, but as of 10:55 p.m. Tuesday, Davis led Dirksen-Londrigan with 137,978 votes to her 91,163. Davis spokesman Aaron DeGroot said they were still waiting on Champaign County's early votes to be counted before reacting to the AP call. but shortly after 11 p.m., Davis claimed victory in a speech from Taylorville. "We've got a pretty comfortable 5,400 vote lead," he said. "And you do the math, we believe that the media outlets that have called us the winner are going to be right." Champaign County Clerk Aaron Ammons said that as many as 100,000 votes were expected in the county, but only about 10,000 had been counted as of 10:55 p.m. Londrigan spokeswoman Eliza Gleaser said they were also still waiting on Champaign County's results and that the two candidates had not yet spoken to each other. Davis's apparent victory comes after an extremely tight race in 2018 when Davis defeated Londrigan by less than a percentage point. Davis watched the results come in from the Knights of Columbus Hall in his hometown of Taylorville. Londrigan was planning to speak to her supporters via Facebook Live from her hometown of Springfield. The race was always expected to be close, with political forecasters rating it a toss-up, and the two candidates raising a similar amount of money. Davis actively campaigned for Donald Trump as one of his election co-chairs in Illinois, a departure from his withdrawal of support in 2016 over Trump's Access Hollywood comments. Miller said she wasn't surprised by her victory in the heavily Republican district. "I have felt confident throughout my entire campaign," Miller said on WDWS AM 1400. "I represent this district well, and I think the voters knew it." Coronavirus response. Quarantined still had chance to vote Tuesday. By Deborah Pressey, Urbana. About 20 Champaign County voters who were in quarantine or isolation due to COVID-19 were still able to get out and vote on Election Day. And thanks to some collaboration between the county clerk's office and the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, they were able to vote safely from their cars, curbside style, at the Brookins Administrative Center polling place in Urbana. Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride was in full personal protection gear, serving as the go-between for voters in their cars and the election judges. "You can literally consider me nothing more than the tool that they used," Pride said. Angela Patton, Chief Deputy County Clerk, said half-hour appointments were scheduled in advance for people in quarantine or isolation with COVID-19 on Monday afternoon and throughout the day Tuesday. "And those voters were incredibly grateful to have a chance to still be able to vote," she said. "It ran seamlessly all day," she said. Pride was on hand all day Tuesday, also handling sanitizing that needed to be done for the curbside voting process, Patton said. Pride said she dealt directly with voters who pulled up to the curbside, carrying their identifications to the judges to verify, bringing the voters their ballots, and delivering the completed ballots back to the election judges. An election judge was outdoors with her, but stood further back from the voters arriving in cars, she said. "It was fascinating for me, having voted in every election since I was 18, Pride said. Jay Simpson, Jay's Take. Regardless of outcome, it's important to move on. People were frightened, businesses were boarded up, and anxiety was at an all-time high. This was election day. Some may say we didn't have the best candidates to choose from, but someone had to win. I've never been into politics because I've never felt my opinion mattered. Even to this day, I'm still not quite sure if it does. I just think the higher-ups will always determine the final outcome, and they couldn't care less about what we think. This election marked only my second time voting in my life. Although I'm not a firm believer, I still do have hope. Maybe this election can change the way I feel about politics and give me more faith in our political system. I really hope so. I know there are a lot of people who feel the same way. Still, I encourage everyone to vote. Regardless of the outcome, I hope we can keep things civilized, even if we disagree. Tearing up the city or being violent to people who are on the other side as you will not change anything. Let's just take whatever we are dealt and live our lives the best way we can. Peace to all, and please be safe. Opinion, Jim Day. Campus speech issues clogging federal courts. Colleges and universities all across the country have been cracking down on what they call offensive speech to keep students in line. That's keeping University of Illinois graduate Nicole Naley and her organization Speech First much busier than she anticipated. Naley joked that she once expected to work myself out of a job, but that there are free speech problems all over the place on campuses these days. On the heels of setback in First Speech's lawsuit challenging U of I speech enforcement policies, her organization recently picked up a big win when the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals reinstated the organization's lawsuit against the University of Texas. But the unanimous three-judge panel did more than reinstate a lawsuit dismissed on spurious grounds by a trial judge. It delivered a lengthy opinion that challenged the whole idea of universities adopting vague rules regulating speech, encouraging students to file anonymous complaints against each other, and enforcing speech code violations with campus climate response teams. Writing for the court, Justice Edith Jones was openly skeptical of Texas's claim that it would never punish students for making rude, uncivil, and offensive statements on controversial issues. If there is no history of inappropriate or unconstitutional past enforcement and no intention to pursue discipline against students, under these policies for speech that is protected by the First Amendment, then why maintain the policies at all, Jones wrote in a 32-page decision. Campus speech codes generally have not fared well in the courts, mostly because they seek to regulate speech with unconstitutionally vague rules that lay the groundwork for barring any speech on a contentious campus issue. Jones's opinion noted that the most common subject of speech complaints on the Texas campus involves issues related to Israel and affirmative action. Those two hot-button topics generate heated emotions on all sides of the arguments, making them fertile ground for complaints about language used and arguments made. The university tried to evade the federal court's reach, arguing that Speech First members, who are students, have no legal standing to challenge campus speech codes. The university also argued that the lawsuit was moot because it modified some of the disputed language in its multiple sets of rules. U.S. Judge Lee Yackel brought the university's argument on standing, but the appeals court said his conclusion was simply mistaken. The chilling effect of allegedly vague regulations, coupled with a range of potential penalties for violating the regulations, was, as other courts have held, sufficient injury to ensure that Speech First has a personal stake in the outcome of the controversy, she wrote. Ironically, the U of I won on the standing issue before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals after U.S. Judge Colin Bruce dismissed the lawsuit. Naley said Speech First is considering whether to ask the U.S. Supreme Court to review the dismissal. Given conflicting rulings in different federal circuits, the normally long odds against the high court deciding to hear the case are not quite as long. Both the universities of Michigan and Illinois have tried to evade courtroom showdowns on their speech codes. After Michigan lost on the standing issue, it reached an out-of-court settlement with Speech First, in which it agreed to dismantle and never reinstate its campus bias response team. Regarding the issue of mootness, the appeals court justices were skeptical that Texas would not reinstate more restrictive speech rules if the justices accepted its argument that the lawsuit was moot. Noting that Texas described its disciplinary speech rules as bedrock standards to which all university community members must adhere, the appeals court said it found the timing of the university's adoption of more specific language to be suspicious. Sydney, people have spoken. Village to allow chickens after all. By Dave Hinton, Sydney. Chickens can stay in Sydney, the village board has decided. The board reversed course from October when it voted to prohibit the raising of the fowl in the community. Those who own chickens had until the end of the year to get rid of them. But after hearing from about 10 residents Monday night, all of whom said not allowing the birds would be a most foul action, trustees rescinded their vote and said chickens would be allowed to stay. About 25 members of the public attended the meeting, the first held in the town's new community building. The board voted last night to repeal the ordinance we passed last month and to sit down and basically work out a common ground for allowing them and decide on what regulations everyone can agree on, Board President Jason Arrowsmith said. He said among the comments in favor of allowing chickens were that many people thought of them as pets, more like a cat or dog. A few people spoke about having fresh eggs and using the droppings for fertilizer, Arrowsmith said. At its December meeting, the board is expected to discuss regulations for chickens, including the size of pens and how many of the birds will be allowed. In other business, the board learned it will be unable to apply for a state grant to build a sewer system. The village currently has a septic system. Arrowsmith said the state is offering up to $5 million per grant, also another $30,000 grant to help pay for the engineering. He said the village is actually ahead of the game. We went through the planning and engineering about 10 years ago for a sewer system, but voters nixed the proposal. Arrowsmith said the board learned it was too late to meet all the necessary regulations this time. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette dated Wednesday, November 4, 2020. Please stay tuned.